acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a...
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 52, An Addictive Knit. Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. And I am podcasting for you again this week from along the banks of the Delaware River. I had a lot of fun doing that for the last episode, and it's just too nice of a day to spend any time inside recording. This episode contains the following segments: ever-expanding skill set, the back porch, a little bit of learning, and gratitude journal. Hello to Paloma Straza, who is Jen from Yakima. I believe that's in Washington State. Jen introduced herself on the Yarns at Yin Hu Ravelry board for introductions. Welcome to the show. Lots of folks have joined into the Asymmetrical. This is a craft along for an asymmetrical garment or accessory. The craft along continues until September 26th, and there are a number of prizes already listed on the finished object thread on the Ravelry board, and I'd like to add two additional ones. Last week, I visited Conversational Threads in Emmaus, Pennsylvania, or Emouse, as my GPS speaker refers to it. And there I picked up some Yarn Garden, one-of-a-kind sparkly sock yarn from Cindy, who is the proprietor of Conversational Threads, and she had sent me a message to tell me that she wanted to make this contribution, and it took me a little while to get out to Emmaus to her shop to pick it up. So I have put a photograph of this beautiful yarn up on the finished object thread. In addition, Susan Levitin, who is the proprietor of A Riot of Color in Worcester, Mass., emailed me to let me know that she would like to contribute 1,400 yards, 100 grams of silk in the spring leaves colorway from her shop, which is A Riot of Color. It is an Etsy shop, and it specializes in use of vibrant color. So you can see both of those gorgeous yarns on the Ravelry thread. Ever-expanding skill set. I have been asked by a very close friend and colleague, Christy, to offer some classes in the fiber arts at a new space that she is cultivating in Highland Park, New Jersey. This is a workshop space thinking about health and wellness and well-being, and she asked me to consider the kinds of workshops I would like to offer there. And I thought of a few different things, so I'm very excited to announce that some of these classes are already available for registration online, and there will be a couple more coming up in the future. The workshop space is called The Inner Space. It's in Highland Park, New Jersey, and I will put a link to this as well as other things I talk about in the show notes on my website. One of the courses is a beginning spindling class, and the other is a meditative spindling class. They are both intended for true beginners, folks who may not have done any spinning before. I think it would also be appropriate for anyone who has done a little bit of spindling but doesn't feel very proficient. I will be providing fiber and a variety of different kinds of spindles for folks to try. If you happen to have a spindle that's working or that isn't working, you are welcome to bring that with you also. In preparation for these classes, I've been doing a number of things. One is that I've been ordering spindles of all kinds. I think I mentioned in a previous podcast that one of the things I won at the Super Summer Knit Together in Nashville was a drop spindle made by Dawn, and her Etsy shop is Dawning Dreams. I really liked the spindle, and I liked the potential of the spindle as a student spindle. One of the problems I found with true student spindles, and there are a number of them on the market, they're pretty inexpensive, between $10 and $20, and they're rather indestructible, but that also means they're unbelievably heavy. And when you start as a spinner, you are using your arms and your neck and shoulder muscles in ways that you probably haven't before. And using a heavy spindle means that the actions can get very uncomfortable very quickly. And I think that's often what dissuades people from continuing, is that their muscles ache and they have terrible yarn and they just don't feel like doing it anymore. What I liked about Dawn's spindles is that they're pretty lightweight. And so I ordered a variety of them. Some a little bit lighter, some a little bit heavier. I also have amazing fiber from Sherry, who runs the Fiber CSA in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, Spinner's End Farm. So we'll be working with some of that fiber for the spindling class. And then this past week, I was just looking at photographs on Instagram, and I noticed that Laura Lala of the Knit Girls posted something about a 3D printer making a Turkish drop spindle. I was incredibly intrigued by that, so I contacted Jen of Turtle Made Etsy store and inquired about a 3D printed Turkish spindle, and this afternoon in my mailbox, I received my first 3D printed spindle. This is a pretty neat little object. It's very lightweight. Mine is in a brilliant, nearly glow-in-the-dark orange color. It slips together very easily, very securely, and spins very well. So I think I will also be ordering some 3D printed spindles in a variety of weights and sizes for students in the spindling classes to try. In addition to the beginning spinning and meditative spindling, I'll also have a few other offerings at the Inner Space in Highland Park, and I will be telling you about those in the future. The back porch. Anticipating the start of the school year, I completed a number of felted projects and decided that I would expedite the felting by taking them to my mom's house to use her top-loading washing machine to felt them. One of the charming features of Yarns at Yinhu is our lack of laundry facilities. We have exceedingly hard water, and it would be rather futile to have a washing machine without a pretty top-notch water filtration system. And as of now, that's just something in which we haven't invested. So I take my laundry to a wash and fold, and I'm very happy to turn over the chore of laundry to other folks. But sometimes having a washing machine comes in handy, and that's when I go hang out with my mom. She lied, by the way, about being done with canning, because when I arrived at her house last week, she had another pot of salsa and another pot of spaghetti sauce simmering on her stove. And after we did some felting, we ended up canning all of that. So thinking that, anticipating that it would take several cycles in the washing machine for these oven mitts and a Booga bag and two small felted vessels to felt and have their felting magic work, I was absolutely shocked when we opened the washing machine after the first round, the first cycle, and already things were quite a bit smaller than I had anticipated them being in their finished form. So, lesson learned. I'm not sure what we could have done about slowing down some of those cycles. Maybe not using hot water. All of the suggestions I read said, you know, hot wash, cold rinse was appropriate for felting. I don't know. They felted very quickly. I'm not displeased with how things came out. The Booga bag, it looks great. It's quite small. It's more like a little purse rather than a bag. The smaller felted vessels are quite small. And it's interesting how much different the machine felted objects look than the hand felted objects. The one sort of disappointment was the oven mitts. I intended the recipients to be men in my family for these oven mitts, like a grill mitt kind of thing. And the two that we felted were not big enough for a man's hand. So I did have to knit one additional oven mitt, and I think I will be hand felting that just to be on the safe side. These will not be my last felted objects. I may have to cool off on that for a little while and work on some other things. Using a large needle size like the size 9 and size 10 and a half was a little bit hard on my hands. So I think using those size needles sporadically would be a good idea. But I really enjoy the process of felting. I like working with 100% wool yarn, and I like doing some color work and other little bit of creative leaps, and I like the way that felting hides mistakes or inconsistencies in the knitting. So I felt liberated to work pretty quickly on the projects, knowing that felting would hide a lot of the errors. Another project on the back porch this week is one that I didn't even know I would be knitting at the time of the last recording. That is the Upstairs Downstairs Cowl in 3 Sizes by Paula Emmons Feasley, who is Paula, Prairie Piper of the Knitting Pipeline podcast. This is a darling little cowl. I knit the smallest size, which calls for about 250 yards of a sport weight yarn. It's a design that is feminine without being frilly and is certainly an addictive little knit. I used US size 6 needles and some Madeline Tosh Sport in the Jasper colorway, which is a gorgeous blue-green color, a little bit of speckles of brown and cream. And the Tosh Sport is certainly a very nice round yarn, which shows off the stitch definition in this pattern very nicely. I started this project on Saturday evening, and I worked on it a little bit on Sunday, and I worked on it intermittently throughout the day on Monday, and completed it last night. I just couldn't stop. It's an addictive little knit. One of the reasons is that Paula provides a tutorial for knitting garter stitch in the round so that you don't have to purl. I like purling. I don't mind purling. So when I started this pattern and I cast it on and did the first 10 rounds of garter stitch, I just knit one round and purled the next. And then I worked on the lace pattern, and then I thought, well, let me look at this link Paula put in her pattern. And I watched her demonstrate how easy it was to knit garter stitch in the round without purling. So then I kind of got carried away in the center section of garter stitch because the Tosh Sport yarn is 270 yards per skein, and Paula's pattern called for only 250. So I figured I could throw in a few extra rows of the garter stitch in the center, and then I returned to the lace pattern. The lace pattern, by the way, is super easy to memorize. It's intricate without being fiddly or fussy, and it's intuitive, so it's easy to see whether or not you are following the pattern or you somehow missed or dropped a stitch or made an incorrect stitch. You can see it very clearly what you're supposed to be doing, which I really like when I'm knitting a pattern because I don't have to be wondering whether or not the stitch work is coming out appropriately. Paula's method of writing the pattern and the format for the pattern itself is very neat, very clear, very easy to read. It's very similar to Helen Stewart's method of putting patterns to paper that she uses for the Curious Handmade designs. And I think they're both Paula and Helen are drawing on some other source or some other inspiration for the way they're putting these patterns to paper, but it really appeals to me as a knitter, and it makes it very easy to follow along. You also know every few rows what percentage done you are, which I think helps with the addictive quality of this pattern. And it also helps you to think about whether or not you have enough yarn to complete the pattern, or you can add a few extra rows in one section of the pattern. One of the things I discovered because I was reading through the entire pattern is that I've been doing a slip-slip knit all wrong for a very long time. And I never noticed that it looked awkward, and no one has ever commented on that who has seen my knitting. So maybe it's kind of a subtle difference, but there is a difference. What I've been doing all of this time, thinking it's a slip-slip knit, is really a knit two together through the back loop. Because I read somewhere that, and I think this is true in most situations, whenever it says slip in a pattern, you slip as if to purl. And that's true, but in the case of a slip-slip knit, you slip each stitch as if to knit it. And then you return them to the left needle and then knit it through the back of the stitch. I didn't realize that until I was working on this pattern. So it just goes to show that rookie mistakes are never really off your radar. In the photographs I have of this completed project, I have not blocked it or steamed it. It seems ready to wear as it comes off the needles. It may be that using a little steam blocking or wet blocking this cowl will improve the texture a little bit, but I was pretty pleased with it as is in this Madeline Tosh yarn. I also think that this is a terrific pattern to give as a gift because, as I said, it is feminine without being frilly. It's rather understated and simple, but still looks a little bit intricate. And I think that most recipients would be very pleased with a cowl like this and would be able to wear it with almost any, you know, fall or spring garment, certainly, and also as a winter cowl if their winters are rather mild. I also think that this could easily be knit in a worsted or an Aran weight yarn to give a little more heft to the cowl and with a slightly larger size needles, and that would also be very pretty. So thank you, Paula, for the gift of this pattern and for a knit that was thoroughly enjoyable. A little bit of learning. First, a prize drawing for the month of August. The Bulk Bins Cook-Along featured nuts, and there was lively discussion on the Ravelry thread for the Bulk Bins Cook-Along, with many folks posting recipe ideas, photographs, and links. The winner for the prize drawing for the month of August, who will receive the gift of a Ravelry pattern, $7 or under, is Sarah S.E. Hepworth, Sarah from West Yorkshire, and she won for post number 12, which is for a lime dragon dressing. And this is quite a versatile dressing that can be used both as a sauce for a stir fry or something like that, and also as a cold dressing for a salad. Congratulations, Sarah. Please send me a personal message letting me know what pattern you would like to receive. And thank you to everyone who has been playing along and posting for the month of August. In September, we undertake barley as an ingredient for the Bulk Bins Cook-Along. As I typically do, when we approach a new ingredient, I take a look at the World's Healthiest Foods website and compile some information that you may or may not be familiar with, but I think it's always interesting to know a little bit more about an ingredient. Barley is a cereal grain that originated in Ethiopia and Southeast Asia and has been cultivated for more than 10,000 years. It has been a source of food for both humans and animals and has long been the basis for alcoholic beverages. In an episode of the Tudor Monastery Farm that I've been watching with Samuel, Ruth Goodman is using barley to make some beer. The beer consumption during the time of the Tudor Monastery Farm, which would have been the mid to late 1500s, I believe, would have been about 7 to 8 pints per day because the water sources were often contaminated and it was dangerous to drink fresh water. Have you been watching Tales from the Green Valley or Tudor Monastery Farm? Do you have a little bit of a crush on Peter Jin? No, I'm the only one. Well, you should check it out and get back to me. Dietary fiber in barley boosts friendly bacteria in the large intestine. Also, propionic acid in barley's insoluble fiber helps to lower cholesterol. Barley's fibers are high in beta-glucan, which lowers cholesterol by binding to bile acids and removing them from the body. Barley is known to provide a 1-2 punch against colon cancer, first because of its incredibly high fiber content, and second because it is high in selenium. And several studies have touted an inverse correlation between selenium intake and lowering the incidence of cancer, meaning that the more selenium, the fewer instances of cancer. Here's some interesting information about fiber content in a variety of foods. Oatmeal, 1 cup, 4 grams of fiber. Whole wheat bread, 1 slice, 2 grams of fiber. Whole wheat spaghetti, 1 cup, 6.3 grams. 1 cup of brown rice, 3.5 grams. 1 cup of buckwheat, 4.54 grams. 1 medium apple with the skin on, 5 grams of fiber. Raspberries, 1 cup, 8.36 grams. And 1 cup of barley, 13.6 grams. Did you know that barley was honored in China as a symbol of male virility? Or that gladiators were known as hordearii, which translates eaters of barley? I encourage you to purchase some barley in one of its many forms from the bulk bin section of your local supermarket or health food store and cook along for the month of September. Use hashtag bulkbinscal to tag your recipes and photographs when you're posting to social media. Gratitude journal. I'd like to thank everyone who has been in contact with me since the last episode of the podcast. I've received a flurry of supportive notes and tips about sock knitting and also some compliments on finished projects that were very generous and kind. So it means so much to me to receive your comments, your questions, your feedback, and your good-natured socialization on all variety of social media. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is So Wheat, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a